having these three very simple guidelines or principles becomes a way to align everyone on the inside and on the outside as to what the brand represents. And that's, I believe the simplicity in that has its benefits.
Hi, I'm Jeremy Goldman, and this is Future Proof.
One thing we wanted to cover on the show for a while is brand purpose. It's increasingly becoming an important consideration for brands, in part because many consumers care more about that attribute, especially younger consumers. 27% of Gen Zers are very likely to pay more for a purpose-driven brand, according to an April study by Cubist Martini. That's why I wanted to speak to Andreas Markdalen. He's the award-winning global chief creative officer of Frog. For 20-plus years, he's been leading and forming relationships with leading global consumer and enterprise brands across a wide array of industries and domains, and increasingly those brands care a good deal about something near and dear to Andreas's heart, which is brand purpose. I spoke to him about how the concept of brand purpose has evolved over the years, how it has to be aligned with a brand's values, and whether or not brand purpose actually increases customer loyalty, or if loyalty is dead. I know I learned quite a bit during this discussion, and I think you will too, so let's jump right in.
Andrea, welcome to Future Proof.
Thank you so much, Jeremy. Great to be here.
So the first thing that I'd like to start off with everybody is, who are you and what do you do on a day-to-day basis? How do you define your work and yourself?
My name is Andreas Markdalen. I'm the global CCO of Frog. And Frog is a global creative consultancy founded in 1969. We've been around for 52 years this year. My job is a lot about creating a kind of shared creative vision for all of our teams globally. And I feel extremely excited and privileged about that journey and excited to see where things are going next.
Yeah, I think it's a really interesting time to be working in your area. And this show obviously straddles the line between the future of tech and politics and society, a lot of different things. And something that that's very near and dear to me is the idea of brand purpose. And I'm wondering, from your perspective, how has the concept of brand purpose evolved over the years?
Yeah, I think it's a great question. And it's, brand purpose is one of these topics that we've been discussing with our clients going back to the very beginning of Frog, right? Over the last five decades. I think that there are, obviously, with the pandemic recently and some of the shifts that we're seeing in the global context, the urgency and the discussion and the discourse around brand purpose have certainly accelerated. But the topic around brand and brand purpose has always been there. I think essentially, brand purpose comes down to a very simple question, right? It's about understanding why your business exists. It's about understanding why your customers should care about it and why your employees should care about it. And I think for Frog, in the way we discuss purpose with our clients, it's about defining a kind of shared compass for the business and the strategy moving forward, and using this compass in moments of ambiguity and tough times like the ones we're going through right now, really to push the direction forward and drive the strategy. Purpose has always been there since day one, but I think right now in this moment, it's getting more and more important in terms of customer expectations to deliver on it. And that's why it's so exciting to discuss purpose today.
I'm glad that you brought that up, just because I feel like it's always my job to challenge these ideas a little bit, even if I sometimes agree with the person I'm speaking to. So just to challenge that, why is the idea of brand purpose so important, particularly now? Because I think that there are a lot of things that are pressing down on brands to almost make branding less important. There's an argument to be made there, but I think obviously there's an argument to be made in your direction. So why do you think it's so important, especially now?
I think what we've seen over the last decade or so is businesses increasingly competing on experiences. That's been very much the narrative coming from Frog and other competitors playing in our space, right? Where we know that brands, in order to compete today in a highly competitive marketplace, need to deliver excellence in every single interaction with the customer, whether we speak about a product or a service or a customer experience or something else. What has happened recently, and I guess accelerated by the pandemic, is that people have been evolving their expectations, not only on the side of experiences, but also being coming out of this or going through this experience, who they are as people, what kind of values they support as individuals. and how they essentially can find brands and products and services that reinforce their beliefs. Through the pandemic, we've seen also other meta trends happening, larger societal trends that defines our context. So we're looking at the sustainability discussion. We're speaking about social justice. We're speaking about privacy and ethics concerns. And all of these discussions, I believe, are accelerating this need for brands to be able to deliver not only great experiences in the everyday and through the interactions with the customers, but also be able to share that story, that narrative that speaks to how they are different from their competitors, but also why they exist. So I think it's a combination of brand and purpose and experience all coming together. And experience is really a way to deliver upon that promise as well. So it's everything together. It's not one thing or the other.
And I think also one thing that's interesting building on that is just the idea of brands having to figure out essentially what their cause and what they stand for. I mean, you mentioned certain things like sustainability and social justice, and it just seems to me, and please tell me if I'm wrong, that it's important to find the right things to focus on and to make sure that you've got things that your customer cares about, but also feel tied to the DNA of the brand so that you're not doing something just for the sake of doing it that kind of seems like it's altruistic, but in reality doesn't connect back to the brand in some authentic way.
Absolutely. There are plenty of discussions around purpose washing and greenwashing, right? I think it's about, as a brand, taking the long-term view and, as you say, create a purpose that aligns to your DNA, your mission as a company, and really create a transparent dialogue with your customers where you set expectations that you can actually deliver upon. I think what turned a lot of people off during the Black Lives Matter movement was that everyone was sharing the same stories, everyone was publishing the same messages, but there was very concrete actions in the long term being committed to. So I think that is key to understanding purpose, being able to commit to things that are true to you, and being also able to make those commitments where you can actually deliver on the purpose.
It's also interesting because it seems to me that customers have a little bit more ability to call you out as a brand if you're doing something, like you said, you know, purpose washing. If you're just saying that you're committed to a certain thing, a everyday consumer has the ability through social media to actually check, do some research, figure out if you're actually committed to it, and then hold you accountable in some way. And there can be a bit of a backlash if you're just saying that you're doing something, but not actually committed to any type of action.
Yeah, definitely. I think, and let me share an example of what I think is the right way to speak about purpose. Recently, or over the past couple of years, we've been working with a client, a startup based in Dallas called Alto. And what's interesting about Alto as a company is that they are trying to go in as a new player and disrupt the ride-hailing industry. So they're going up against Uber and Lyft and some of the established players and really try to compete on two things, right? They're starting to engage and they're trying to reach a new type of customer, looking primarily at the female audience. And their whole brand purpose is based around consistency and quality, but most importantly, safety. And they've built a mission, they've established their purpose, and they speak about safety in every single moment. And that becomes the way that they speak about why they exist in the world. They want to create a service that disrupts this specific space, but also delivers upon this promise. And the way that they show that, the way that is manifested in the experience is that the customers that start using this service essentially are brought into an experience that feels completely different. Alto has their own dedicated drivers. They have their own dedicated fleet of cars. They can completely customize and shape the experience within the car. And they can also shape and form a connection and a relationship between the driver and the passenger. And this allows them, essentially in every single moment of this interaction, as part of this experience, to deliver upon this promise and this purpose around safety and quality and consistency. And that is the right way to do it. And then, of course, there are bigger topics to discuss there as well and a bigger picture for Alto. But I think that's a very concrete way of translating your company's purpose into experience and delivering upon that.
It seems like one word that we're talking around is the idea of focus. And I'm wondering if you had a client that felt very strongly about four particular topics and said, we want to build a campaign around four different things that really matter to our brand. I'm wondering, would you necessarily advise that? Because it just seems to me that the more pillars that you add, I worked at one time at a skincare brand, Kiehl's, where we had three key pillars that we supported. And I thought it made sense because to me, three is manageable and you're able to explain why you care about these three pillars. But you can't really go to say we care about nine things and every single month we're going to support and talk about something else. It seems like there's diminishing returns there.
No, I agree. It has to be simple and memorable and it has to resonate and mean something. I think what's interesting, again, coming back to the example of Alto, they use these principles, as they call them, the brand principles, as a way to speak to their employees on the inside of the company and to their customers on the outside. So having these three very simple guidelines or principles becomes a way to align everyone on the inside and on the outside as to what the brand represents. And that's, I believe the simplicity in that has its benefits.
And then just to challenge things a little bit more, because again, I'm somebody who feels brand purpose is very important, but at the same time, the area that I'm covering all the time, you hear about customer loyalty and whether or not customer loyalty is dead. And it seems like there are some people who really want to convince you that, nope, it's alive and well. And there are some people who say there are all of these different reasons why customer loyalty doesn't exist in the same way that it did when you and I were kids. Does having some brand purpose actually increase customer loyalty? And is there any data around that can convince, let's say, the naysayers who might be listening?
Yeah, I think there are perfect examples of that. And I think the obvious go-to is Patagonia, right? That is obviously have found a great way to connect their ethos and their purpose in the world with how they speak, the tone that they use, the initiatives that they choose to support, but also their products and their services. Right now, they are launching this marketplace for recycled garments and clothing. And I think these are, you know, perfect examples of how you can reinforce customer loyalty and build cyclical interactions with customers over time, through the products, through the services, while still supporting and integrating this idea of purpose. The second example, very similarly, would be IKEA as well, more in the European context, but globally, that have invested heavily in their loyalty program over the last few years, where they're trying to figure out how they can expand the engagement with their current customer base. And they are taking a slightly different route and a slightly different direction with their loyalty program, where it's not about counting points or getting rewards for interactions, but they are paying back their customers with value-added services in constructing and building a home over time. So both IKEA and Patagonia, I think, are great examples of purpose, loyalty, service and products coming together to drive value and drive that engagement and drive that loyalty over time with customers.
And then at the same time, I think it's important to think about how customer loyalty has changed over history. Because one thing that I can think of, and I'm wondering if there are any other factors that at least you've got to be cognizant of. One thing is just the fact that consumers have so much choice. And I think about grocery delivery. Now, it used to be that you went to the store, you look for a specific brand. Now it's more so you go onto something like Instacart, and then you just get trained to search for a particular item and maybe not even at a particular retailer. So you start to become more loyal to the platform rather than the retailer or the individual manufacturer of the SKU itself. So I'm just wondering, how has loyalty changed and does that come into play at all?
Yeah, I think so. And you captured a couple of the key trends there. So I think we're definitely observing some interesting patterns in the world of direct to customer, where obviously customers are migrating more towards what we would refer to as vanilla brands that are offering products in decentralized platforms and are able to create really interesting personalized product offerings in the moment. That's definitely an interesting trend. And then I think we spoke about customer expectations before as well. There's this whole trend around personalization that I think is getting more and more important for us in our work, where we speak about just the need for products and services to optimize themselves and change and evolve in the real time together with the customers. We speak about real-time marketing, for instance, where you might have e-commerce experiences that adapt themselves, adapt price points, adapt product information and product imagery to the habits and the patterns of the user in the moment. And I think that's really fascinating. I was looking at some data in a recent study around the kind of expectations on personalization, and 78% of all customers said that personalized content made it more likely for them to repurchase a product. So I think that there is something there in the intersection between loyalty, real-time experiences, commerce, and personalization, where some new paradigms are forming.
Well, it makes a lot of sense if you think about it, right? Because customers are becoming more and more aware that their data has some value, and everybody falls in a different place from a privacy standpoint. I happen to care about privacy a lot less than some people, so I have to be cognizant of that when I'm looking at this market. But it just seems to me that if people are giving up data, they just want some type of value exchange there. And one of the top things you can do is give them a discount, but that's a little lazy. And if you are able to, let's say, personalize your content and give them more personalized offers, or even the way in which you engage with them acknowledges the data that you have on file about them already, then you're going to be in better shape, because there are a lot of brands that are not doing that.
Absolutely. And that comes back to purpose as well, where you speak about the ethics and the usage of data. Like, what is this brand that I'm interacting with? What is the product? What is the service? And what value am I getting back for it? Do I feel comfortable to give information up to receive a different type of service in return? So it is that intersection and that interesting loop between continuously having that expectation for better and more personalized experiences, while also knowing that we're giving something back in return that can cause, you know, complications and debates and discourses around ethics and data usage.
So obviously that's one way that things are changing right now in terms of customer expectations in general. What else are you seeing in terms of customer expectations? I know that a lot of people are talking about experience, and I think that feels, I know what it is, but if you ask me to say in one sentence what it is, it's a little bit different to each person who's going to talk about it. So how would you say customer expectations are changing, particularly around experience?
Many of the expectations that we see in the B2C space, so consumer products, meaning everything you would pick up to use on your iPhone or on your mobile device or on your iPad or your home computer, all of those experiences are things that we encounter in our day-to-day life, right? In terms of social interactions, in terms of shopping, in terms of finding inspiration or whatever it might be. The most interesting part of that is how that is now starting to trickle in and affect B2B experiences and the enterprise, where you see that the experiences that might have been neglected or misacknowledged over the last decade, where you speak about enterprise software, where someone might be sitting managing a process in an office space somewhere and working with remote colleagues all around the world. Those types of use cases in the enterprise are now starting to see similar types of expectations as we see in the consumer space. And I would say that's the most interesting shift, and where we can bring a lot of new thinking and a lot of disruption into unexpected areas. And another example of that is public services, right, and government, where processes that might have come from outdated organizations and governments and so forth are now being completely overhauled with this new consumer experience mentality in mind. And that is radically disruptive and something I'm extremely excited about.
I don't know how much you're following this space, but one thing that's interesting to me is the idea of employer branding, and how, especially as the labor market has become tighter in a lot of different areas, people are thinking not just about how the everyday consumer sees their brand, but also how prospective employees see their brand. It just seems to me that's a pretty good tiebreaker when you're trying to attract talent. And that's an area that I think people weren't thinking about from a branding orientation standpoint until somewhat more recently.
Absolutely. And I can speak from this firsthand with regards to the process that Frog is going through right now. Earlier this year in September, we went to market with this brand statement around Make Your Mark, which is essentially our calling and our manifestation of our purpose, the ability to make a difference and leave an impact in the world around us. And in the evolution of this brand statement, this brand calling, we actually began from the inside a couple of years ago. So we didn't launch the statement externally to our customers or our clients or our external audiences, but instead we shifted the focus internally. We started speaking about our talent acquisition process. We spoke about our HR process. We spoke about our internal rituals, our habits, all of the different touch points for building culture and community within the company, and essentially started discussing what Make Your Mark as a brand statement would mean in those contexts. And that became actually the kind of the mechanism for us to drive momentum with the brand and push it forward and really socializing it on the inside before we took it externally. And I think what you're able to do with that approach is that you're able to project that community spirit when you take the brand externally and you take it to market coming out of that. So I would definitely say that this is a trend also, of course, not only for Frog, but also something that we're speaking to our clients about, starting from the inside and ensuring that purpose and brand is lived, is the lived experience on the inside, so it can be projected externally.
I like that. I like that you're essentially not necessarily experimenting on yourself. The very fact that you're a company in this space who is advising other people, but is also working on yourself, I think that's a really good example to give. And I wanted to just, I think, maybe end on a little bit more challenging of a note, because there are obviously a lot of people who, let's say, you guys are one of the premier agencies and groups to work with, period, in the world, for those who are not familiar with your work. And so obviously you're working with the creme de la creme often. There are a lot of people obviously out there who are making purchases just based off of value, and they're buying for maybe small and, you know, medium size businesses. They're maybe just really thinking about value first and foremost. Not that experience doesn't matter to them, but how do you as a brand think about value at the same time as experience? So certainly it's not the only parameter, but I feel like those are two parameters that come in helpful to think about in relation to one another, just because, frankly, if you're spending a lot on creating a strong experience, you've got to factor that into that you're passing on to the consumer. So how do you balance those two?
Yeah, I think, and coming back to your previous point as well, we are definitely in this moment, we're trying to walk the walk, right? So we work with our clients in engagements every single day where we're helping them through transformational efforts to redefine and reimagine their own organizations for the future. And us coming in as consultants in those discussions is about us accelerating that change or supporting that change or helping to drive that change forward. Now we're going through, and we have been going through, a similar journey ourselves. And it is an interesting moment for us in time to actually test some of these techniques out and find a way to scale our brand, scale our value, and scale our purpose really to new levels. When it comes to the culture itself, one of the things that I think bring value to our customers and to our clients in the context of brand is really our mindset as an entity. We speak about Frog being a challenger brand. And one of the topics that we're discussing, we haven't quite landed on this, and I can say this transparently, is the question, how do you scale a challenger brand from 600 people, which we used to be 1 year ago, to 2,500 people? And that is the kind of core question that we are discussing, debating, and ideating around right now. And I think where we're landing with this is that the mindset of a challenger, this idea of being the kind of antagonist in our industry, hopefully thinking and working differently from our competitors and bringing new types of value to our client, that is a mindset that can be scaled to any level. And you know, what we're trying to change, what we're trying to evolve in this new context, is more around what we do. So we're trying to move into new unexpected places. We're expanding our service portfolio. But that mindset around being the challenger, that's why clients come to work with Frog. They want a different type of experience. And the aspiration and my belief is that, of course, that we can scale that now to a larger footprint to be able to deliver that challenger value. I think that sits at the core of it.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. No, this is a really interesting discussion, especially about the fact that I think that there are a lot of people who do get the power of brands and why it's so important. And then I think there are a lot of cynics out there. And I love talking to those cynics because time and time again, it's been proven that building a strong brand does actually matter. And there's no reason to indicate that it's going to be going away anytime soon.
Yeah, I actually see this as a great era for brands and branding. And I assume here we're speaking about big branding, which is all about the world of mission and vision and purpose. But as I mentioned before, we're coming out of this era where businesses have been investing in experience. They are now, and this is something we see with our clients, right? The pioneers of some of the leaders out there, they have built very strong teams on the inside of their companies. They're forming design ops and DevOps. They're building out capabilities to deliver and produce great products and services. And actually brand in that context is becoming the differentiator again. And I guess it's in that sense, it's kind of a rejuvenation for big B brand strategy. And I actually think that's really exciting.
Amen. I think that's a perfect point to leave it. This was a great conversation though. Andreas, thank you so much for making the time.
Thank you so much, Jeremy. Thank you for having me.
Thanks again to Andreas for making the time. I thought this was really interesting. If you'd like what you just heard and this is your first time here, be sure to subscribe. Apple Podcasts, Overcast, Stitcher, the choice is yours. And if you're a longtime listener, please remember to rate and review Future Proof, as that's the number one way we get the show in front of people just like you. Special thanks this week to our producers, Jason Stack and V. Cortuccio. Once again, I'm Jeremy Goldman, and you've been listening to Future Proof.